Welcome to the Geek Generation, episode 13. I am joined today by another new co-host. I seem to be having a lot of them lately. And for the first time, a female voice is coming across the airwaves to all you geeks out there. Let me say hello to Anna Zifkak.
Hi, everybody. Hey, Rob.
How are you? I'm wondering if I should be using the tank nickname or not.
You can if you want to. it still applies.
It does. I want to clarify to the audience, that doesn't mean you're some, like, beastly man of a woman.
No,
I'm not that kind of tank.
Right.
And actually, I was thinking of you recently when I have a little partnership going on with Titan Books recently. They've been sending me some review copies of books and things like that. And they recently sent me a Tank Girl graphic novel, and I had never read Tank Girl. And I'm like, oh my God, Anna would love this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I can borrow it, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. Skid Marks, have you read that at all?
No. No, I have Tank Girl 1, Tank Girl 2, and Tank Girl the Odyssey, which is an awesome one. It's the third one, and it follows Homer's The Odyssey.
Oh, that's weird.
Tank Girl and all their characters. So it's actually really awesome. I mean, when I first picked it up, I was like, oh, Tank Girl's fun, and, you know, but this is a weird concept, but they pulled it off. It's actually really funny and really awesome.
Cool. I never realized how odd a universe she lives in until I read the the Skid Marks book.
Yeah. There's no water, and she, you know, her boyfriend's a kangaroo, so.
Yeah, that's very odd.
It is odd, but Jamie Hewlett is awesome, and I think it's really well written, and she's one of my favorite female you know, characters, or I guess you could call her a hero, because she's not, like, overly feminine. She's not, like, a feminazi. She doesn't hate men.
Right.
She just is who she is. You know, she might scratch her crotch or burp, but she's cool with that, and so are all our friends, so.
Yeah, I enjoyed the book. I liked it.
Yeah.
So anyway, in this episode, to let the fans know what we're going to be doing here, we have our usual geek outs and freak outs. We're going to play some top three, as we normally do. Once again, we'll take a look at the listener emails, and lately, I decided to go through my newsfeed and clean out a bunch of that stuff in there because we got Comic-Cons coming up soon, and there's going to be tons of new news from those. So we have a ginormous news block to cover today. So lots of stuff. The first thing I want to do before we get into our geek outs and freak outs is I'm going to say thank you to Deora Baird. Do you know who that is?
I've heard you talk about her, but I can't put a face with the name.
Okay. Deora Baird's one of my biggest celebrity crushes, and not only because she is gorgeous, but because I follow her on Twitter, too, now, and she's actually really, really funny. So I'm going to say thank you to Deora Baird for the Twitter love that she gave the Geek Generation yesterday. I often tweet out the new Blu-ray and DVD releases and all that stuff, and said that 30 Days of Night came out on Tuesday, and said that I was sharing that with everyone because we love Deora Baird at the Geek Generation, and she replied, I love geeks. So, gotta
nice.
Love that. A little bit of nice. Geek love from Deora Baird.
There you go.
So, geek outs and freak outs. Is there anything that you are geeking out over this week, Anna?
Yay!
Yes, I actually have two geek outs,
okay.
And then I have, my second one is the same as one of my freak outs.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Yeah, so I'll start off with the just flat out geek out.
Sure.
Definitely geeking about Harry Potter 7. I just cannot wait. I'm literally on the edge of my seat. It's next month, and I'm going to be there, you know, on the first day. I actually haven't been to the movies since Harry Potter 6.
Are you kidding?
I'm not kidding, because I have, like, a really awesome home theater set up now, so I'm, like, a Netflixer. So I don't even bother going to the theaters. It's too much money. I don't like, you know, people elbowing me and talking during the film. So, I haven't been to the theater.
Wow, that's shocking.
In over
to me.
A year. I know.
That's
you go every Tuesday.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, I still try to keep up on my movies like as soon as they come out, but not just on DVD. You know, I don't do the theater thing too much, but I will be there for Harry Potter 7.
As you should be. And the recent trailer just came out, I think, what, a week or two ago?
Yeah. The thing I've always loved about those movies is they're so true to the books. They cut some stuff out, but they don't change all that much. They change a couple of things, but I always thought of it as like a complement to the books. You know, I mean, you can't really watch just the movies and understand what's going on. You do have to have read the book, I think, to get the depth of it all. But it's just such a good visualization. Like the directors and the actors and everything are just absolutely perfect. So to see it on the big screen in front of you, you know, it's just like, it's awesome. I'm geeking out. It's awesome.
How do you feel about the two movies being split up?
I think it's a great idea, because my favorite Harry Potter book was Harry Potter 3, and I thought that they chopped it up too much, and I was really disappointed with that. And 7, you know, being everything coming together finally in the end, I was really scared that you know, they would cut too much out of it. So that now that they're making two movies, you know that it's going to be pretty much probably word for word the entire book, which I think that Harry Potter deserves. Because it's a phenomenal book and a phenomenal series. So I'm pretty excited about that. Some people say it's like, you know, they're just trying to make extra money or whatever, but I really wasn't happy with the third Harry Potter movie because I just thought they cut way too much out of it. So hopefully this way it'll be the whole thing true to itself.
Which one was the third? I'm trying to remember.
Prisoner of Azkaban
Oh, okay.
with the time traveling.
Yeah, that I agree. I mean, I didn't even read the book, so I am going into them totally fresh, and I know a lot of the big things because I asked people that did read them, but I like finding out the things as they go through the movie, and I might not get the full depth, but I do have a good grasp, I think, on what's going on, and they do a good job of showing all that in the movie. But yeah, Prisoner of Azkaban was not one of
I
the
think
better ones.
the biggest problem with that one that I had that I tried to explain to people that didn't read the book, and I'm just going to say, I don't think it's a spoiler because that movie is so old and the
Oh,
book is so
yeah,
old.
no spoiler
But,
alert.
you know, the whole in the movie, they never explain to you that the deer that was, you know, the thing that made the, I'm losing my vocabulary, but the Dementors away, you know, was a buck, and that's Harry's father.
Oh.
And they never explained that in the movie. That is Harry's dad. That's why that is such a big deal that it's a buck, because it was the four friends were each an animal. There was the rat, the wolf, the buck, and a dog.
Yeah, see, I didn't catch on to
So
that at all.
exactly. And that's huge. That's Harry's father. That's enormous. And they never touched upon that in the movie, which pissed me off because that's one of the reasons why that book was my favorite one, is because they tied the first two together. Because if
Sure.
you read the first book, it kind of stands alone. You read the second book, it's kind of like a sequel. The third one ties the first two together, and you're like, oh my God, oh my God. You know, I mean, the rat from the first movie or the first book was a human that was spying on Harry the whole time. I mean, that's deep. That's big.
Right,
That's
right.
a big deal. And for them to cut a lot of those twists and turns and ties out of the movie, I was like, what just happened to my favorite book?
Yeah,
Like,
yeah.
it kind of drives me crazy. But so yeah, I'm pumped about them being two separate movies because I think that way that's not going to happen again.
Sweet. Well then I'll give my geek out next since yours is also a freak out and we'll go that way.
Okay.
I'm geeking out over New York Comic Con because it is coming up this weekend. For the first time, I will be attending a Comic Con as a member of the press, and I've been getting tons of press releases sent to my email, most of which have been deleted, but because most of them are crap. But I am excited about a lot of different things. Particularly, Jim Lee will be in attendance, and I do have a contact who's trying to get me an interview with Jim Lee, and if that happens, that would be absolutely phenomenal. Fingers crossed, I think the percentage of me actually getting it is like 2% out of 100. So don't expect that on the show anytime soon. But if I do, that would be absolutely amazing. There's tons of good stuff to do. I have another member of the staff coming with me. So we're going to be interviewing fans, hopefully talking to some celebrities, maybe some interviews, at least some sound bites, I'm hoping. But at the very least, if anyone is listening that is going to New York Comic Con, look for me in either a Geek Generation t-shirt or my brand new Batman hoodie. So one of the two, I'll be I'll be present and representing. So come talk to me, because it would be awesome to meet fans there. That's the only other thing I have for geeking out. So your next one you had.
Okay, so rather recently, it's come out that both Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter are on board for Bill and Ted 3.
Which is cool. I thought that was awesome too.
I'm geeking about it because I am like one of the biggest Bill and Ted fans ever. I don't remember the first time I saw those movies, and I don't know how many times I've seen those movies. I was actually Bill for Halloween 2 years ago. My sister was Ted, and
you guys love doing the family costumes.
We do, we do.
I still remember Super Mario year.
that was the best, because we got all four of us
that
involved.
That was epic. So,
yeah, that was unbelievable. I think I have that picture on my Facebook, because it's like my favorite picture of all time. But so yeah, I mean, I'm obviously geeking out about it because I'm a huge, huge Bill and Ted fan, but I don't see how they're gonna pull it off. It's like they're going to be pretty much 40.
True.
You know, and the whole character base for those two guys are that they're immature teenage boys. So it's like how you make those two teenage boys who, you know, have like really bad vocabulary turn into like these adults who are fathers and husbands, you know. Speaking of which, Mike Reinfleisch talking about teething last week. What planet am I on?
Right.
I know I've been gone for 5 years, but what's happening in the world around me? I don't know. Teething, Mike.
Yeah,
really?
Married with a family.
Jeez, you know, I don't know.
Times change.
They do. But so, you know, I guess if Mike can talk about teething, then maybe Bill and Ted can grow up. I don't really. I don't see how it's gonna pan out. I'm gonna see it. I'll be there. I'll have a ticket. I'll be there. But I'm trying not to geek out too much about it because I don't want to get completely horrendously disappointed.
I can toss out a theory as to how they're going to accomplish that if you want to hear it.
Okay.
Okay. Here's my thought. Well, Bill and Ted is all about time travel. Or, yeah, all about time travel. So what if their minds were transported and their bodies were not, and they ended up in an older version of themselves, but they were still younger?
Maybe.
That's really the only way I can see it working, to have them still act like that. Because, like right. You said, to have them older and acting the same way is kind of pathetic almost.
Right. See, I was thinking it would almost, if they could completely go in the opposite direction. Because, I mean, what happens in the future in that universe is that they're basically, you know, kings or presidents or whatever. And they rule the world with their rock.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe if they just, you know, they showed them as adults in that leadership role. Because that obviously happened.
Right.
You know, because you saw the future.
Mm.
So if they could kind of figure out how to maybe tone them down a little, but come up with like a really good story. I don't know. I don't have any idea. I don't know how it'll pan out. I'm going to watch it and I'm excited, but I'm just trying not to get too excited.
Yeah.
Well, this is the same thing with Ghostbusters 3.
Sure.
It's like, really, guys?
Now? Really?
I love it. I love it. But how is that going to happen?
Right. Well, a sad thing just dawned on me, too, is that no Rufus.
Yeah, well, actually, they mentioned that. They talked about that, which they're all in agreement that they'll write him out, whether they have Rufus actually pass away or, you know, have him maybe not be born yet. Because we don't know, in Rufus's future, we don't actually know if Bill and Ted are still alive.
Right.
They don't really say what year that is or where Bill and Ted are. So they definitely said that they're going to write him out. They would never replace him.
Good.
Which is
that makes me
nice.
Happy.
Yeah, that's a nice, responsible decision. Yeah, we'll miss him, but at least they're not going to try to shove him in, you know, somebody in where they don't belong. So that's actually pretty responsible. So I'm like, maybe if they can make that responsible decision, then you know, the whole thing will pan out okay. I don't know.
We can only hope.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that's your freak out, too, is just the worry.
Oh, freak out!
Yeah, pretty much. I think that, you know, it's just a little nerve-wracking. It's like, are they just doing this, like, to make money off of, you know, I mean, all that stuff's really popular right now, like the throwbacks, like late 80s, early 90s throwbacks.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, well, if they're just going to throw a movie together to make a couple bucks, then they're going to ruin it.
Right.
You know, so it's just kind of, I just hope that they do it right. And I don't have any ideas, so that makes me nervous too.
Yeah. Anything else you were freaking out over?
Not really. Not too bad. Probably reality TV is my other constant.
I'm glad you say that, because that's part of my freakout, actually.
Oh, good.
Yeah, look at that. My freakout's actually kind of the fall TV premieres. It was a geek out a week or two ago, but there are some shows I'm enjoying, even though some of them are starting up slow. I mean, obviously, Dexter's been awesome so far, and a lot of the mainstays. Smallville's been unbelievable. No Ordinary Family is kind of slow, but I can see that they have an interesting direction they can go in. But the reason that I'm freaking out over all this stuff is two shows already, and I haven't had a chance to watch either yet. One is Lone Star, and the other is My Generation. I do have both episodes of My Generation available to watch. I just haven't gotten around to it yet. Come to find out, they're both canceled already, which is insane because they've produced more episodes than that already. And is one or two episodes really enough to decide if a show's worth keeping on or not? Because that doesn't seem like it's getting a fair shot. It could still be getting out there. Word of mouth has to spread. There's a huge number of factors. And really, to do the reality show tie-in, I'm just happy at least someone's making new shows that aren't like Flava Flav's Booty Caller who wants to castrate a rhino or something like that.
Right.
Like, it's insane. And someone brought up a point the other day. I think it was on the Howard Stern show I was listening to. And someone said that reality TV is actually killing television because we're getting more reality television because it's cheaper to make. But the problem is that you can't syndicate reality TV because once someone sees it and it's done, it's kind of over. That stuff doesn't get replayed. So even though they're getting a cheap go around the first time, they're not going to make as much money off of it. And I think that's why a lot of the fall TV shows that we're seeing are not reality television, but then no one's watching them because they're all stupid.
Right.
So it's like an endless loop of reality suck.
Basically, I'm a little bit of a different side. I don't watch a lot of television. I'm into movies and video games and that stuff, but I really don't watch that much TV. I mostly stick to the Discovery Channel and the History Channel. Mm. I like to learn. That's just the way I am. And what bothers me about those two channels is they're, you know, pushing a lot of reality too.
Yeah.
Which irritates me because, you know, in my, like, you know, it started with Deadliest Catch. That was a really popular show. I've watched a couple of episodes. It's educational at first. You're like, oh, that's how they catch crab. Yep. That's pretty interesting. But you can't have a whole season because it's the same thing day after day. Like, they catch a crab, they swear at each other, and somebody gets fired. Like, that's just what happens. You know, and then they moved on to now they're doing Swords, which is a fishing show about, you know, marlins. Oh, well, okay, after they catch the first marlin, it's the same show over and over again. You know, and then they had Man vs. Wild, which I like, Bear Grylls. I think he's interesting. He has a kind of a cool show. He shows you a lot of neat stuff. Mm-hmm. But then there's Survivor Man. And then there was Dual Survivor. Oh my God, two guys instead of one. And now there's Man Woman Wild, who is a guy and he brings his wife along. It's like, really? You know, it's like, I could watch Mythbusters for hours and hours and hours on end. But when I go, you know, at night and I'm on my guide and flipping through what's on and there's like a Swords marathon, I'm like, are you kidding?
Yeah.
You know, and then, Swamp Loggers and Swamp People and American Loggers and Ice Road Truckers. And it's just like, come on, guys. Like, I think they should have just done one show that is like weird and interesting jobs. And then done like an episode on each job, you know, like Dirty Jobs.
Right. Well, yeah, they already have that show.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's just really irritating to me. Like, all I want to do when I get home from work is like sit down and you know, watch Mythbusters or Dirty Jobs or learn something because I like their documentaries too. Mm-hmm. And here I am stuck with a Swords or a, you know, Deadliest Catch marathon. It's just like, what the hell? You know, it's just the same episode over and over and over again.
The only shows that I would even consider watching that are quote-unquote reality shows are things that are competitions and not like who's going to date so-and-so. That's ridiculous. Right. I like a game show or something where, and I'm not even talking about like Top Chef or anything like that. I don't like any of that either. I want something where people are really competing and it's not, well, let's watch them compete and then watch them go back to the house and hang out. Like,
right, and bitch each other out.
Yeah,
and
I just want the competition.
Right. And then every episode is different too. You know, like Dirty Jobs and Mythbusters, technically they're kind of reality TV. They were sort of random people that can do these cool things and they, you know, show that to you, but every episode is different.
Right.
You know, the stupid crab show, every episode is the same.
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't understand. Like, I mean, is America so dumbed down that they really love watching people yell at each other for hours on end?
Yeah.
I don't get it.
And on the subject of reality TV, I'm going to say this to all the people that hate wrestling out there and criticize me for years about watching wrestling because it's quote unquote fake. All your reality shows, guess what? Fake. They're the
nobody really acts like that.
Yeah, they're the new wrestling. They're all scripted and nobody realizes it yet. But when they all start to figure it out, I wonder if it's going to go in the same direction or if people will just say, oh, guess what? We knew it was fake all along. Doesn't matter. It's still entertaining because, I mean, to me, wrestling, well, is arguably, quote unquote, still entertaining. I'm really getting bored with WWE recently, but, yeah, I mean, it's the same thing. Wrestling is the precursor to reality TV, except it was actually smarter.
And entertaining and physically difficult. I mean, at least you anybody watching it has to respect that. I mean, if you jump off the top rung, you're an athlete of some kind anyways.
That's right.
But I think the problem is just society loves trash, and now there's just so much of it.
Yeah, there's too much trash to wade through, and it's overflowing the landfills, and we can't handle it anymore. We need real programming now.
That's when I shut my TV off and play video games.
Hell yeah.
That's where I go.
Video games are for.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, in that case, we'll move on from freakouts, and I think it's time to play a little top three, if you're ready.
I think I'm ready.
Excellent.
Three, two, one.
Being that you are the Final Fantasy fangirl that you are, I'm going to ask you who the top three Final Fantasy characters are.
Oh, easy.
Really? That easy?
Easy.
Oh.
Do you know how many hours I've spent thinking of this?
Probably too many, I suppose.
Yeah. My number one favorite Final Fantasy character ever is Celis from 6.
Okay.
She is not the main character, but I think the strongest character in the game. A lot of people like Shadow the best. He's the ninja, and he's awesome. I agree with that. But, you know, I'm going to have to go with the theme here, which is she's a very strong but cool female. She is like a soldier, basically. So she's one of the most physically strong characters, even though she's a girl, which I think is pretty cool.
Cool.
And she's not like a whiny bitchy girl like so many Final Fantasy women are. Really, really annoying.
No.
And horrible. And so she doesn't fall into that. So I love her for that reason. And she has like a little side romance story in that game, which is kind of cool, but you know, she denies it the whole time because she's like way too tough for love. So she's my fave probably ever.
Cool.
My second favorite would probably be Red 13 from Final Fantasy 7, and he is a tiger lionish bear type four-legged creature.
I've seen him.
he's awesome. I like him partially for his uniqueness because he is an animal, where, you know, most Final Fantasy characters are either, you know, two-legged beasts or human. So he's pretty awesome that he actually stays on four legs all the time, and he's also really strong, but he's really smart, and he's just an awesome character. I love him. And number three, actually, I might have to think about this for a second.
Oh,
I might actually have to think about three. Let me see. Because, see, Shadow's pretty good.
It's always when you have one slot left that it really becomes
difficult. Yeah, because you're like, I could put like four different people in there. Right? Yeah. I can't. I have to pick one. We can cut the first four games, right? Or five games right out, probably. I think that the real Final Fantasy stuff started with 6.
Okay.
And we already covered 7. I never played 8. I boycott 8.
Why?
From everything that I've read about it and reviews on the gameplay, the reviews on the gameplay are that it's really bad. As far as just the fighting and the magic system and everything, and supposedly it's got bad gameplay. And it's also very much like a sort of a 13-year-old emo girl type game. Like, I guess the main character is super grumpy throughout the whole thing, and like, my life sucks so much, and you know, it's just way too emo and depressing for me.
Not down with that.
not down with that. So add that to the bad gameplay, because you can have like a bad plot but really great gameplay, because that was 13. That's what I just played 13. I'm still doing some side quests, and it had a really poor, I thought, linear plot, but the gameplay is really fun. Mm. So it's fun to just run around and kill things. So it's like you have to have one or the other. So I'm probably going to have to go with maybe Lulu from 10.
Okay.
I love her because she's a black mage, but she's probably one of the strongest. I usually don't play with a black mage because, they can do elemental attacks and that's pretty much it. So for the first half of the game, they're like really powerful and useful. And then toward the second half of the game, when the enemies get more complicated, they're pretty much useless.
Really?
So,
in most role-playing things, it works in the reverse, where a magic wielder is somewhat weak at the beginning, and then as they build up their spells, they're more powerful towards the end.
Well, in 10, the first half of the game is all elemental, so it's like, okay, you have an ice enemy, you hit him with fire.
Okay.
I mean, it's pretty basic. So, like, you always have a way to defeat the enemy with Black Mage because, you know, but then later you get, like, you know, enemies that are not vulnerable to any elements. You know, so you have to hit them with, like, the power of dark or the power of light or, like, some other kind of, you know, darker, deeper, more complex magic.
Gotcha.
You have to hit them with status ailments and stuff like that because just elemental magic doesn't work on them anymore because they, you know, the game writes it out, which is like, okay, it's like I can't kill this thing because it has no vulnerabilities. But I used her through the whole game and she gets really powerful, so I liked her. And I like her attitude, too. She's kind of dark, but she's not, like, depressing dark. She's, like, leaving the frick alone. she's a very solitary character. I guess I could call her a bitch, but, like, in a cool way.
Okay. So. Little standoffish, but gets the job done type character.
Yeah. Yeah, she's not, like emo girl depressing goth. She's, like, yeah, just standoffish and doesn't need any help from anybody, and, yeah.
Cool. All right, well, that was quick and right to the point. Well done.
I'll think of something different next week and be like, wait, I take it all back.
Everybody does. Everyone does. Well, in that case, I'm going to suggest to the fans one more time. I said it last week, too. While I do love coming up with top three categories, I'd love to give the fans an opportunity to submit those. And if you would like to suggest any top three categories to the show, if you want to aim them at a direct co-host, feel free to do that. Or just direct them to the general population, then you can send those to podcast@thegeekgeneration.com, and I would love to use those in the future. So normally I've been getting in the habit of doing listener emails after the break, but since we do have such a big news block, I figured we should take care of those now. So last week we asked you who is your favorite female actress in an action role. I have a few responses to go through, the first of which was on Facebook and from Kim Amato. She said me. Not as in me, but as in her. I'm playing the part of a lifetime supermom. No, really, though. Jamie Lee Curtis is her answer.
Okay.
So she backtracked and went with Jamie Lee Curtis, which I'm trying to think of. Yeah, Jamie Lee Curtis fits in the mold somewhat, I think. Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever seen her in an action movie.
I'm trying to think. Like, True Lies, kinda.
Yeah.
I don't know. Nothing really comes to mind.
No.
I don't know if you can consider, like, a Scream Queen action role.
Yeah.
I don't know. Oh, well, I'll let her have it. The next one's actually from you, Anna. So I don't know if you just want to give your answer, if you want me to read the one you submitted.
I think it'd be funnier if you read it.
Okay. I'll do that.
Okay.
It says, Rob, that's me. I'm so glad you asked this. Should I read it like you or no? All right, I won't do that. Sigourney Weaver. She is my hero. In the Alien trilogy, she was not only tough, being the only one to survive the Nostromo. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Okay. But also sensitive and smart. Long before the days of CGI and extensive fight training, Sigourney was kicking serious alien ass. Who can forget the moment when she says, "Get away from her, you bitch," while controlling the loader, ready to knock the queen alien out of the airlock. I'm sure you will get much hipper and younger actresses for the answer to this poll question. However, I feel like female action heroes of late have to meet only two requirements, hot and tough. Sigourney Weaver is a great actress and brought realistic emotion and personality to her character Ellen Ripley. She didn't just kick ass, but developed a character that evolved from one movie to the next, getting stronger and darker as she went. And you also had the PS in there to note your email address, which has the word Ripley in it. I'm not going to throw your email
right
on the show, but it does have Ripley in it to show you are a true fan.
Yep. That was my first and only email address since, you know, I got an email address because she is my hero.
First and only, I do remember creating you an email address years back.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Which you still have like 40 megabytes of data in.
Really?
Yeah, it's still open if you want to use it.
I'll have to see what's there. It could be something interesting, like a time capsule.
Maybe. The next one comes in from superfan Chris Tong. He says, "Hey, Rob, this week's poll question was an easy one for me. It has to be Uma Thurman as the bride in the Kill Bill series. She was sassy, sexy, intelligent, witty, quick, and fearless. She had nothing to lose. She took out all the big shots in the movies. She is, in my mind, the baddest bitch. Keep it cool, Chris Tong, Wichita, Kansas." I like that Chris included his location because it does give me an idea of where these people are actually writing in from.
Yeah.
So that's Kansas. I like that. We're reaching out.
Nice.
So you like the pick of Uma Thurman?
Yeah, I actually didn't think of that one because I was overconsumed with Sigourney Weaver. But,
understandably.
I'm a huge Kill Bill fan. I love those movies, and she is amazing in those movies.
I'm going to go on the flip side because I hate Uma Thurman and I hate Kill Bill. And I'm not just being the devil's advocate here. I watched Kill Bill and I was like, eh. And then Kill Bill 2 came out and I go, you know what? I don't care enough about the characters to see what happens to them. So I never even bothered watching 2.
Wow.
Yeah. And Uma Thurman, everyone's like, oh, she's so hot, sexy. Da-da. That's one of those women. I just don't get it. I don't see it. She is ugly to me. And I don't.
Yeah.
I
agree with you on that. I never really thought she was that pretty. I mean, you know, there's a difference between like real pretty and Hollywood pretty. Obviously, maybe sure. If I saw her walking down the road, I'd go, wow, you know, that's a good looking lady. I don't really know because we don't know her personally. But
right. You don't? Because I can just call her up right now.
You know, we're like sisters. But But no, I agree with you on the looks thing. But I think that's part of the problem with the whole female action hero thing. It's like, why do they have to be hot? You know, not every male action hero is hot. You know, so
I don't think
the looks don't really have to be in there. I mean, Sigourney Weaver's not, I mean, she's not an unattractive woman, but she's certainly not hot. You know, maybe that's because it's like, I'm as a woman, because I mean, I do think hot action stars, like male ones are, I guess I like them better than the ugly ones, but it's not a requirement, you know, so
right.
I don't know. I think that's like a little bit unfair, which is sort of, you know, was my point in my answer. It's like, okay, yeah, we all know Mila Jovovich is attractive, but, you know, does that make her a good actress? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily a requirement either, but it's just, I don't know. I think it's a criticism. There's not too much I like about Uma Thurman at all, honestly. Her acting doesn't impress me either. So it's kind of, for whatever reason, she's just like the one actress who just, I don't know, nails on a chalkboard watching her for some reason to me. I don't know why.
All right, well, you're entitled to your opinion.
Yeah, and she screwed up Poison Ivy. Why would you cast... I mean, that movie was screwed up anyway, but...
Yeah, right.
Why would you... If you're casting, like, this crazy seductress, why would you cast Uma Thurman?
Maybe they thought she'd look good with the Ivy eyebrows.
Maybe.
The costume was a little effed up, too, yeah. So...
Well, at the same time, they decided to cast Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze, so... Clearly,
right.
Judgment was not in the right place.
Right.
Next response comes in on the Twitter from @snowkitten35. Simply says Angelina Jolie. Kind of had to expect that at some point, I guess.
Yeah, I saw that coming.
Yeah. She's been in way too many action movies to not be up on the list there. And finally, last but not least, in from G1, who says, favorite heroine, Mila Jovovich as Leeloo in The Fifth Element.
Okay.
And you know G1, even though I don't use his name.
Yeah, if you used his name, maybe.
That would be Jaren.
Oh, all right.
Jaren is our biggest fan here at the Geek Generation.
Yeah, he sends in a response almost every week, I think.
Oh, yes. We've simply started referring to him. It was Jaren at first, and then it became Jaren 1, and now it's G1. So,
all right.
So that's one of those things you really have to be up on the show to understand.
<I guess so.
laughs> And as the number one fan, he's earned that right.
All right.
Yeah. And that's pretty much all the listener emails. So... It's a good time right now for us to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be back with our super mega news block. So we'll be right back.
We all know the best podcast in the world is
The Geek Generation.
But what you might not know is there are other ones, such as...
Like you and me, Hector and Todd. Dangerous Memory.
That's right.
We're reviewing the AFI Top 100, and we're bringing new episodes every Wednesday. Come check us out on www.hectorandtodd.com.
Hello, listeners. Do you shop on Amazon.com? Would you like to support the Geek Generation while shopping on Amazon.com?
Well, then I have good news for you, because you can do both without spending any additional money. All you need to do is visit www.thegeekgeneration.com and find the Amazon button on the front page. Click the button, do your normal shopping, and check out. You have spent no additional money, but you have earned us a commission. Please make this a regular part of your Amazon.com shopping routine.
Hello, this is Ned Vizzini, author of It's Kind of a Funny Story, and you're listening to the Geek Generation Podcast.
Welcome back. We are ready to head into our ultra mega super duper very long news block, so hang in there. Top story this week. Zack Snyder has been chosen to direct the new Superman movie, which Christopher Nolan is producing for Warner Brothers and Legendary Pictures. Snyder confirmed his involvement to Deadline and made the following statement. Quote, "I've been a big fan of the character for a long time. He's definitely the king of all superheroes. He's the one. It's early yet, but I can tell you that what David Goyer and Chris Nolan have done with the story so far definitely has given me a great insight into a way to make him feel modern. I've always felt he was kind of awesome. I'll finish Sucker Punch and get right at it." Any thoughts on Zack Snyder helming Superman?
I haven't seen too many of his films. I did see Dawn of the Dead, which I loved, and I thought it was, I mean, for a remake, a really good movie, and a really good, you know, true to the original. So I think that he probably has the capability to maybe make Superman go a little bit darker, which I think would be probably pretty interesting because, you know, blue tights are like a little old. So maybe he can bring something kind of like, you know, they did for Batman Begins, like just bring it down a couple notches. I think that he might be a good guy to be able to do that.
Yeah, I'm a little hesitant to say I'm excited about it necessarily. And I said in a previous episode that he sometimes goes a little bit too far with the action and takes it to a level of violence that's just kind of almost non-realistic. And I know it's Superman, he has superpowers and realism is whatever, but I don't want him to go overboard and have Superman like snapping people in half and stuff. So, but I guess having Christopher Nolan godfathering the whole project still will keep that in check. And I, like I've said before, I have faith in Nolan. So anything he decides, I'm okay with.
Yeah. Plus, you know, being a Superman movie, they're obviously going to gear it toward, maybe not kids, like little kids, but I mean, they're not going to make it too violent because they're going to lose half their audience.
Sure. NBC picks up Odd Jobs starring Emerson and Quinn. We previously reported that Lost stars Michael Emerson and Terry O'Quinn were looking for a comedic project together. It now looks like, with the help of some friends, the two will be reuniting on NBC. J.J. Abrams and frequent collaborators Josh Applebaum and Andre Nemec began pitching the comedic drama to the networks last week that would have the two actors playing former Black Ops agents. NBC got the project despite strong interest from ABC and Fox, both of which were intrigued by the idea of Ben Linus and John Locke's alter egos teaming up again. NBC has made a pilot commitment to the show, which had been known as Odd Jobs, but is now technically untitled. Did you watch Lost at all?
I didn't. You know, like I said earlier, I'm not a huge TV person, but, you know, it was obviously extraordinarily popular, so I'm sure this show's going to get a really good shot because people are going to want to see them again.
Yeah, well, Lost was an amazing show in my mind, and Michael Emerson and Terry O'Quinn were easily the strongest actors on the show, and they had a fantastic chemistry together. I just am wondering how well that's going to translate into a new show, because when you become known on something that iconic, it's hard to forget that they were a previous character, and now they have to assume this new role, and that's going to be the biggest challenge, I think.
That's true. I'm usually pretty bad with names, so I usually name people after their characters instead of the actor, you know, actors.
Right.
So, like, if, you know, if I was into that, I'd probably be calling them by, you know, their Lost names, because it's like, who the hell are they? I don't know. That's that guy from Lost.
So, oh, yeah, there's no doubt that's going to be happening.
I can see that happening, yeah.
They might as well just call them John and Ben just to stay consistent with people.
Right, right, exactly.
Let's see. This story might be something a little more familiar to you. WWE Universe Mode has been detailed for WWE SmackDown vs. Raw 2011. We definitely got our game time going with that back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
According to the THQ press release, quote, "In WWE SmackDown vs. Raw 2011, we are proud to announce a revolutionary new game mode appropriately titled WWE Universe. The mode merges new features with popular aspects from past games, such as career mode, exhibition mode, My WWE, and title matches, to deliver a dynamic new experience. This year, the game will track all playing habits and automatically generate a customized WWE world for players to enjoy. The power is in the player's hands, and the result is a unique, individualized gaming experience filled with unexpected twists and turns, just like WWE. Basically, it's a never-ending season mode that generates feuds and allies based on whatever you do during the matches, which is really cool. And if people don't like that, then in the main menu, you can simply click the right stick and turn the whole mode off and just play regular exhibition matches. So that's kind of cool, too.
Yeah, I think that's definitely an awesome feature because I remember we used to joke, you know, they'd come out pretty much every year and every year would spend how many hours, you know, redoing our characters and redoing our movesets. And the game was basically the same. Yeah, the graphics were better. Maybe there was a new mohawk, but I mean, it was pretty much the same game over and over again. Which was fun.
Yeah.
But and I remember the story mode being really linear. I mostly played it with you guys because the story mode was so linear. And it was particularly bad for the divas, which I was a female because like my own character, you know, was considered a diva. I think actually at one point we made my character into technically a guy, even though he had boobs and like my stats were retardedly high. Right, because I couldn't even play, which sucked, you know, and then story mode, forget it. So it was like I'd only play with you guys or my family or whatever. So I think that's an awesome feature that actually will bring more, you know, interesting forward moving, you know, thing to the game, because before it just, I mean, as much fun as I had playing it, it just would sort of dangle for me.
Yeah, and the biggest complaint that fans have had over recent years in playing the game is that they always wanted a season mode that didn't end because they were sick of going through the story and then having it come to an end, then having to start all over. So this is kind of like a self-generating story mode that doesn't end and is supposed to react to whatever you're doing during matches. That's always been a little buggy in WWE games in the past. But if they actually pulled it off where what you do actually generates who your enemies and allies are and what kind of matches you have, that would be absolutely amazing in my mind.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
The next story, Sir Michael Caine reveals the Inception ending. Now, have you seen Inception before I get into this?
I have not, but okay. I was a bad girl and I read a lot of your site, so I kinda...
Oh, okay. Okay, well, I don't know if this is necessarily a spoiler, but Todd and I did discuss the ending of Inception in great detail during the spoiler room segment in episode 6. I am going to throw out a spoiler alert here because it does talk about the ending of Inception somewhat explicitly, but I guess it's not like the biggest thing in the world. So if you haven't seen Inception, you want to turn off here, feel free. Or if you want to skip ahead about 30 seconds to a minute and you should be safe. Michael Caine said recently on a BBC radio show, quote, "The spinning top drops at the end. That's when I come back on. If I'm there, it's real because I'm never in the dream. I'm the guy who invented the dream," end quote. And I'm not going to say any more about it. I'm not going to translate that for people who have seen Inception because you'll understand that. And those of you who haven't might not even understand it, and you might forget it by the time that you actually see the movie, which is good. But I will say congratulations to me for being right the entire time. That just proves that, yes, I was right again. Next story, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, the game. DLC is coming in November. Ubisoft announced at its 2010 Digital Day event that DLC is on the way for Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, the game, in November to coincide with the film's release on DVD and Blu-ray, which is coming out November 9th, by the way. The content will include a new playable character, Knives Chow, along with two new modes, a free-for-all arena battle with weapons, and dodgeball. The price will be $1.99 on PSN, or 160 Microsoft points on Xbox Live Marketplace. At the same time, a patch will be issued to address difficulty balancing, squash several bugs, and introduce drop-in, drop-out co-op. The latter will be for offline play only. When asked, Ubisoft said that there are no plans to incorporate online multiplayer into the game, nor any further DLC planned. Have you seen Scott Pilgrim vs. the World? Probably not, huh?
Batting zero here.
Yeah, so I know. See, as far as movies of this year go out, Inception, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World are like my one and two. So okay. If there's something to go watch, and Scott Pilgrim comes out on November 9th, so you're not far away from that. I think you'll love that movie.
All right, I'll have to put them on my list.
Cool. The game I've been loving on PSN, and it's really a classic style, like 8-bit side-scroller beat-em-up. And it's nice to have the multiplayer, but the problem for me is that there's no online multiplayer. Because I know people that have this game, like Todd, and I could be kicking butt in the Scott Pilgrim universe with Toddles. And right now I can't because I can't play online, and that's obnoxious to me. So it's disappointing that we're not going to see that for this game, because it is what would take it from good to great. But I'm happy we're getting some new add-ons and that it's going to be so cheap. So I'll take that. Exclusive version of Jim Lee's Icons will be available at New York Comic Con. New York Comic Con is your chance to get your hands on one of Titan Books' most anticipated releases ever, called Icons, the DC Comics and Wildstorm Art of Jim Lee. Congoers will be able to bag themselves copies of the NYCC exclusive limited edition of the book, signed by Jim Lee with an exclusive Batman art print and a variant dust jacket. Jim Lee himself will be on hand for a signing and a panel to discuss the book. And I am friggin' pumped for that.
Right. Yeah, that should have been your geek out.
Yeah, well, I would have probably made it my geek out, except that
it was in the news.
It was in the news. I didn't want to get ahead of it. But I don't know how much this limited edition variant is going to cost, but the fact that it comes with an exclusive Batman art print kind of... I think locks it in for me. And if I can get that signed by Jim Lee, holy crap, I'll pay probably close to $100 for that.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah, so I'm really, really excited for that.
That's awesome. I would love to have a copy of one of those too. I mean, I'm not going to New York, but, you know, I collect art books, and I used to actually go to Borders and pull out all the, you know, DC and Marvel encyclopedias.
Yep.
In the comic book section, and just look at the art. I mean, that's one of the best parts, obviously, of comic books, and he's the best of the best. So to have that book looked pretty thick.
Yeah.
I looked at the picture of it. I mean, to have that would be a great, great book to have.
Well, that's if it makes awesome. You feel any better, this is just the limited edition for New York Comic Con. There is a regular edition coming out that just doesn't have the Batman print and the dust jacket, and it's still just as thick, so.
Yeah, I'll have to go look for that when it comes out, because that is wicked exciting.
Yeah, it's epic.
good adjective.
That's right. Epic. I need a good sound effect for that, but yeah, I don't have one yet. Next story.
Your voice is low enough, you could do it.
And just go, epic.
Right, and put some like echoes behind it.
Sweet. Maybe I'll take that clip and throw the effects on that. Batman Arkham City adds an interrogation mechanic. It looks like the Dark Knight will be getting some upgrades for Batman Arkham City, and they're not all gadget-related. Game director Sefton Hill has revealed a key new feature for the detective mode, which makes solving the Riddler's pesky puzzles a little easier. Quote, as with nearly every area of the game, we're enhancing it. One example is the criminal database coupled with the new interrogation mechanic, he said. The Riddler continues to taunt the Dark Knight with mind-bending puzzles and exploration challenges, but the location of his biggest secrets are known only to him and people he's told. Rather than unlocking their locations using maps, Batman will be able to scan a gang of thugs to find a potential informant. He'll also mention that you'll have an added challenge when it comes to combat now, as you'll need to leave your potential informant conscious. Quote, this is the guy you need to question, but first you'll have to take down all the other gang members while sparing the one you want. That can be tough when Batman's in a seamless free-flow combo chain. And on a side note to that, Rocksteady has said Arkham City is reportedly complete and playable from start to finish, which is very cool. Did you play Arkham Asylum at all?
A little. I played like the demo, but yep. A little short on cash right now, but it was really fun.
Yeah.
So that's something I'll get, you know, hopefully it'll be cheap now that the second one will come out.
Oh, sure. PS3, right?
Yeah.
Okay, you can borrow my copy. I already got 100% the Platinum Trophy and everything, so.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, there you go. You can play through that before Arkham City comes out, but Arkham Asylum, when it came out, easily one of the best games of the year. Like I've said before, if Uncharted 2 didn't come out the same year, then it would be the best game that came out that year for sure. Easily the best Batman game. And having even more things that are true to Batman, like interrogating criminals for information, is awesome.
Yeah, that's a wicked good idea. It definitely, I mean, is more Batman-like not to kill everybody in his wake and to try to get information out of people and to you know, let him go. I guess.
Oh yeah,
sort of a Batman-ish thing, anyways. But I think that's a wicked good idea, and I mean, no other game has ever really done that, so that's pretty sweet.
And in all honesty, I don't think he's leaving anyone conscious anyway. I mean, after he gets the information, that guy's out cold.
That's true.
That'd be true Batman style.
Right, exactly.
The Avengers, Earth's Mightiest Heroes, premieres October 20th. The new animated series, The Avengers, Earth's Mightiest Heroes, will premiere Wednesday, October 20th at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Pacific, all that other time, apparently, on Disney XD. Produced by Marvel Animation, the series features Iron Man, Thor, Captain America, the Hulk, Ant-Man slash Giant Man, and Wasp. In the meantime, too, they're actually rolling out, if you go to the Marvel channel, I believe the username is just Marvel, on YouTube, they're rolling out mini episodes of the series to introduce characters and get people familiar with the series. I'm kind of iffy about this because I really like the idea of an Avengers cartoon, but it's another one of those cartoons that seems to have an odd blend between the animation and like CGI. So I don't know how much I'm actually going to like it.
Yeah, it's hard to get used to any of the new type animations. I like good old fashioned hand drawn cartoons myself, especially as an artist, because I do both, you know, hand drawn art and electronic art. And I know electronic art it has its place and it's a lot easier. But you know, it's sort of sad to me to watch you know, good old fashioned cartoons go by the wayside, because they really are better. You look at like when we were kids, you know, Transformers and She-Ra and He-Man, and those were all done by hand. And to watch people, you know, put shows together like with Flash is just irritating to me. What was that? Well, the Powerpuff Girls, obviously, and then what was the other one he did with the monsters in the house?
Real Monsters.
While both those shows I thought were funny and good, the animation just irritated me the entire time. So it was kind of like, I mean, they were funny, but there was something unsettling about watching them.
Yeah, I mean, I liked Powerpuff Girls, oddly enough. But
well, it's hilarious.
It's a funny show. But like Samurai Jack, I think, was somewhat similar, although I think that was a little more animated. But like even this show, I watched the Iron Man mini episode. It was about 5 minutes long. And the thing that disappointed me is that the character of Tony Stark in that show, they did take a nod from the movies. He's very much modeled after Robert Downey Jr. But they decided to take that snarkiness that Robert Downey Jr. uses in the movie, and they made it every frickin' line that he delivers in the cartoon. And it's too much. It just doesn't... Like, anytime you say anything to him, he comes back with something that's an attempt to be witty and sarcastic, and sometimes it falls flat. Because when you do it over and over and over again, it's overkill.
Yeah, maybe if you give like the full episode. I mean, obviously you're gonna try the show and watch the whole thing.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna give it a shot.
I'm just gonna throw it out there, be doing that because they are trying to introduce the character, so they may be just trying to nail home that this is who he is. It might not be as bad once they get into like the full, you know, show where it's not like focused on Iron Man, you know, because if you're watching the Iron Man mini episode that's introducing Iron Man, then, you know, they might try to like push some points home a little harder than they will when you get everybody together during
Let's hope that's the case, because he's cracking wise more than Spider-Man does right now, and it's upsetting me.
We don't want you to be upset, Rob.
Yeah, I know. That should be the goal of all comic companies and cartoons.
Call Rob first and check if it's okay.
That's right. Don't upset me personally. That's the big goal. Mike and I said it last episode. People, listen to this show. We're always right.
Right.
That's the key. All right. Next story is another one you might be a little more excited for. Wonder Woman series is headed to TV, supposedly. Wonder Woman may be making a return to the small screen. David E. Kelly, The Practice, has come on board to write and produce the series for Warner Brothers Television. Kelly, who has created several shows like The Practice and Ally McBeal and Chicago Hope and Boston Legal, has wanted to tackle a contemporary take on the World War II era Amazon. As Smallville is currently in its 10th and final season, there's no doubt that a Wonder Woman series would aim to fill the gap left when Clark Kent and company say farewell. But the big question here, who do you think should play Wonder Woman?
I didn't think you were going to ask me that.
Psh, why wouldn't I?
I don't know, because, I mean, you guys have talked about this a lot in the podcasts of late. Because, you know, talking about the movie coming out, which it looks like at every you know, turn, the movie's kind of not really working out too well. But I think everybody's answer has been an unknown, which one of your co-hosts mentioned might be a cop-out.
Mm-hmm.
But I think with a TV program rather than a movie, that's a more likely, you know, answer, is to have an unknown for in the TV show. Like, I don't think they could get away with that in the movie because, you know, people talked about, you know, just simple ratings or, you know, them trying to make as much money as they possibly can.
Yep.
But I mean, the actor that played, Clark Kent in Smallville, I'd never seen before.
Well, yeah, he was a model before he started on Smallville.
Right. My problem with the Wonder Woman actress is I think a lot of actresses, that are, you know, popular named people right now they're too slight. You know, I almost think a model would be a good choice because she's a freaking Amazon.
Right.
I mean, you know, they talked about Jennifer Love Hewitt. Are you kidding me? She's like a peanut. She's a peanut. I mean, first of all, I don't think she's attractive. She's got the world's biggest forehead and she just, I don't think she's pretty, but she's tiny. And it's like, this woman has to be both gorgeous, but she has to scare you. You know, you have to think, okay, she could kick my ass. In which Angelina Jolie, you'd say, okay, you know, she might work, but she's beautiful, but she's way too unique looking. I think a Wonder Woman is like a classic beauty. Like, she just has to be flat out pretty. But I think she has to be tall. I think she has to be like a real kind of big lady. You know what I mean? Like, and a lot of the actresses that people have thrown out there, I just think are like too slight and too girly.
And yet, so that can be accommodated for to a sense, because I mean, you never notice that Tom Cruise is as short as he is in movies.
That's true, but Jennifer Love Hewitt is a freaking peanut.
Well, yeah, so. she's like a stick. The girl's got to have some meat on her bones.
But like Mila Jovovich, who came out of nowhere from the modeling, you know, career to be Lilu in The Fifth Element, and then move on to be Alice. You know, that worked out really well. So. I don't want to cop out, but at the same time, with a TV series, I really think they should go in that direction and they should give somebody, you know, a chance and not pick, you know, some well-known, really popular, hot. I mean, please, God, no, Megan Fox, please, please, no. I mean, she's the hottest thing out there, but please, no.
No, I can understand that. Her acting is not up to a Wonder Woman level. While she might look the part, it's not really for her. I'm going to stick with my best choice for Wonder Woman, who I've always suggested and who I'll always stick with, whether it be the TV show or whether it be the movies. I think Bridget Regan, who was most recently on Legend of the Seeker, which unfortunately was canceled because I enjoyed that show. But she's got the dark hair, the blue eyes, and she was in an action role for pretty much the whole of the Legend of the Seeker series. So she's done that before. Her acting is great. She could absolutely play Wonder Woman. And I would take it either as TV or as a movie. Because to even start a Wonder Woman series does not necessarily mean that the movie is not going to happen. Because we still got Superman Returns while Smallville was running. So who knows what they're going to do.
Yeah. No, I agree, because I'd like to see it in movie form too, but I think that a TV show is a great idea because there are so many superhero movies coming out right now.
Yep.
I'd hate to see Wonder Woman, who is, you know, one of the big time staples, especially obviously for a female superhero, kind of fall in with, oh, remember that decade where there was like a million superhero movies and there was a Wonder Woman one thrown in there, you know,
I mean,
I'd love for them to work on it, maybe to the level that they did with Batman Returns, and really come out with a really good Wonder Woman movie.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Hopefully,
so if they want to take their time, I'm with them on it. Go ahead. Take all the time you need. But I think in the meantime, a TV show is awesome. And like they said, it would fill the gap that Smallville has left behind and you know, be geared toward a woman superhero, which is just a great idea.
Yeah. I agree. There's not much else I can say. this is kind of old news, but I'm going to throw it out there anyway because we really haven't talked about it yet. Lucasfilm Limited has announced that the live-action Star Wars saga will be converted to 3D. Presented by 20th Century Fox and Lucasfilm Limited, the cutting-edge conversion will take the immersion of the Star Wars films to the next thrilling level, with Industrial Light and Magic supervising the project. Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace, is expected to be released theatrically in 2012. And you can probably tell from my enthusiasm of reading that story how unimpressed I am with the news.
Yeah, I was afraid my opinion would be a little unpopular, but I hate 3D.
I'm not a huge fan either, honestly.
I don't know, maybe it's like my brain and my eyes, but to me it's very blurry and distracting, and I hate it. I actually, speaking of Harry Potter 6, in the last movie I saw in the theater, the opening scene to that movie was done in 3D, and I took the glasses off. I can't even watch it. I hate it. So, and then that being said, not to go on too much of a tangent, but I really wish that George Lucas would just leave those movies alone.
Right?
I mean, it's his masterpiece, so I respect his right to do whatever the hell he wants with it, but that doesn't mean he should. Leave it alone.
Yeah. Oh, I saw that South Park episode. It's not his right anymore. That belongs to us now.
That's true. That's true. But I hate to see, you know, such a classic set of films go on the 3D bandwagon to make an extra couple of bucks. And I won't be there in the theaters for those. I'll get in the mood for Star Wars, and I'll throw it in on my, you know, giant HD TV with my surround sound and my comfy couch and enjoy it the way it was meant to be enjoyed, you know, in my apartment rather than.
I would say that
my face.
I would say I'm not going to go, but I don't want to be called a hypocrite later on. I am not thrilled with the whole 3D thing that's going on right now. There are most movies that I would rather see in 2D. Even though the curiosity is there to see 3D, I'm glad the next Batman movie will not be in 3D, and I don't have to deal with that, because Nolan's smart enough to know, as a good director, that you direct for one or the other. You don't make a movie that's going to come out in 2D and 3D. You make one movie.
Yep.
And if you don't want it to be 3D, then that's it.
Right.
And vice versa. So, I don't know. I'll probably end up going to at least one of them out of curiosity, just to see what Star Wars would look like in 3D. But again, that process of taking something that's 2D and making it 3D is not a good process to begin with. So no, I don't know.
That's part of what I mean when I say distracting. Like it's first of all, you know, whatever's in your foreground, everything in the background kind of gets a little bit blurry, at least to me. I don't know what other people see, but to me it gets a little bit blurry. And you know, part of the exciting thing about high definition, you know, that is all the rage right now too, is that you can see everything in perfect clarity.
Right.
So when you're making me look at one thing and I'm unable to look at something that I want to look at, it's like, no, I'm not interested. You know, that just pisses me off. Don't tell me that I'm supposed to be looking at something on the left side of the screen if I want to be looking at the right side of the screen. You know, it bothers me. It bothers the hell out of me. I hate it. I can't wait. And it is a fad. Nobody can deny that. It's a freaking fad. And it's going to be over. And it's going to be like a joke, you know, like wearing your knee socks outside of your jeans in the 80s. It's going to be a joke. It's going to be like, remember, you know, the first decade of 2000 when everything was in 3D? Ha ha ha.
Yeah. It just bothers me to hear that they're coming out in 2012, which means the 3D fad is absolutely going into 2012. I just want it to be over already. I'm over with it personally. So I think Hollywood should once again get on board with me and do as I wish.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think we should petition against 3D. I think 3D should be done with and over. And
it sounds I don't want
to put some sweaty glasses on that like some fat popcorn eating guy put on his face like, you know, 2 hours before that. Gross.
It sounds like we're starting a new campaign right here.
Yeah. It's going to be like the constant freak out is reality TV in three dimensions.
So wait till reality TV goes to 3D and then we're all going to shoot ourselves in the
face.
Then
I'm going to give up. I'm just going to give up. I'm going to unplug my TV, throw it outside.
Yeah. Last story already, believe it or not. Back to the Future is returning to AMC theaters, which I'm actually excited about this. It's hard to believe, but it's been 25 years since the first Back to the Future film hit the big screen all the way back in 1985. To help celebrate this classic film's anniversary, AMC Theaters is bringing back the film for two special screenings on Saturday, October 23rd at 12:30 p.m. and Monday, October 25th at 7 p.m. on 158 screens in over 40 cities. Now, I can already say I am not going to be around that Saturday. I have to work, actually, which I was disappointed to hear when I found out that this would be airing that weekend. I'm not even going to be in town. However, the 25th, a Monday night at 7 p.m., I think I can swing that. So I would love to see Back to the Future on the big screen.
I already have my ticket.
Do you really?
I do. I found out about it and immediately went to amctheaters.com and got my ticket, so I'm going. So
the site's bothering me because I've looked up the times, and when I advance it to the dates to buy the tickets, it says nothing so far.
Oh, we manage it. I don't know. I'll have to look into it for you. I'm beyond pumped to see this, and I have already told like everybody I work with. So the theater Saturday afternoon is going to be full of me and people I know.
Awesome.
Because we're all on board for it. I don't think that I've ever met anybody that doesn't love the Back to the Future movies. So I mean, I'm super pumped. Like I said, I jumped on board with that the second I found out.
Yeah, it's so amazing. I have to be there one way or the other. I'll figure out a way.
I wish they would do that more often. You know, I mean, I'd love to see like Ghostbusters again on the big screen. I've seen that 100,000 times.
Sure.
Sure, it would never happen, but back to my geek out, Bill and Ted on the big screen would be wicked fun. Any of those old ones, you know, they just remind me of being a kid, and they're back when movies were, especially comedies, were really high quality. You know,
yeah.
Now it's like, I mean, some of the comedies I still like, but a lot of them are just like raunchy reiterations of each other.
Yep.
And back then, they were just so unique. I mean, Back to the Future and Ghostbusters, how different are those two movies?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
they have nothing in common, and yet they're both hilarious, amazing, quotable, you know, great acting. Stuff you don't see in comedies anymore.
Yep.
I mean, I'll still watch, you know, one here or there, but, you know, you and Mike Reinfleisch were talking about, like, Step Brothers and, you know, movies like that, and yeah, Step Brothers gave me a couple of giggles. I mean, I liked it. I didn't hate it as much as you.
But
it didn't. I mean, it's no Ghostbusters. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I think that also to have, I mean, comedies that like don't need to be raunchy to be funny too. I miss that.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and make you super jealous right now then, because there is a theater by me, Cinema World in Lincoln, Rhode Island, that I think they skipped one summer, but they've been pretty consistent about it. During the summer, they do what's called a college movie night. And basically on Saturday nights at like 10 or 11, they will show a movie from the past for $2 and you can go check it out. And over the past years, I have seen, Reservoir Dogs, Airplane, Clerks, the 1989 Batman, Ghostbusters,
nice.
Fight Club, man, and the list like goes on and on. I can't even think of them all right now. But they replay a lot of those older movies on the big screen, and they're awesome to go check out.
That's awesome. I wish more theaters got on board with that because, I mean, like I said, I don't even go to the theater anymore, and it's because movies are in and out of there so fast, first of all. But I would go. You know, I'm saying that right now. I don't spend my money at the theater. If more theaters did that, I would go.
Yeah, and
so
you would
it's a clear money-making, you know, plan there.
Exactly. Because, and they don't even have to charge $2. They could have charged regular movie price, and I would have gone to see Ghostbusters or Batman for, like,
right.
$10.
Well, for $5 and free popcorn, we used to see whatever was there.
Yeah.
Remember? I mean, in Dartmouth, you know,
oh,
it
God,
didn't, matter.
Yeah,
it didn't
week.
Matter what was playing. $5 and free popcorn, I'll sit there for 2 hours.
Absolutely. Well, that's the end of the news block. So, as we roll out of here, I'm going to do a little contest reminder here. A few weeks ago, we announced the 2x500 contest. Our current Facebook fan count is 329. So I think we've gone up one person. The current Twitter follower count has gone from 197 to 204. So we've gained 7 there. And I wish I could credit the fans with that. But believe it or not, those followers all came after Diora Baird gave us some love, so I have to credit her with that.
thank you.
Yes, I have to credit her with the recent increase, but again, keep plugging away at getting the Facebook fan page up to 500, getting the Twitter follower account up to 500. Don't forget to comment on the post on the Geek Generation site. Go to www.thegeekgeneration.com. There's a contest button at the top, and you can find the post there. If you comment on that, you're entered. And if we hit those numbers, I will give away that Best Buy gift card. So that's your friendly contest reminder for this week. That being said, as we wrap things up, do you have anything you would like to plug, Anna?
I don't really have anything to plug because I don't do anything. But
I want to
plug your website because,
hey.
You know, Rob puts a ton of time and energy into this site. And it's really great. And it gives you all the best news. And it's sort of now my go-to place for geekdom, you know, because I don't feel like spending the time and the energy on researching prep. So I could just go to Rob's website and I have it all laid out in front of me. So it's a really, really good source. And I'm not just saying that because you're my friend. I'm saying that because going online and trying to research stuff like that yourself is a pain in the ass. And a lot of websites absolutely suck. And yours is really good.
I appreciate that.
So go to the website and be the Facebook friend and everything else and show the love, because it's a lot of, again, time and effort, and he does a really great job. So great job, Rob.
Thank you. Yeah, and I didn't talk about it at the top of the show, but I meant to. I realize our show is a little shorter than we've kind of gotten the habit of going like an hour and a half, and we're a little shorter this week, but part of that is because of the time that it takes. Like I've said, I recently am working full time again. I literally come home from my job, I spend 2 to 3 hours on the site, writing articles, posting stuff, getting things ready for this show. A lot of that time is spent in post-production from this show, and I'm not patting myself on the back necessarily, just explaining why our show is a little shorter this week, as well as the fact that we have 2 Comic-Cons coming up over the next couple weeks, and there's going to be hopefully a lot of stuff, but a lot of time being put into those things. So I don't know if articles might slow down or not or anything like that. But I also want to thank one of our writers, Doug Clinton, who submitted 3 articles today that I have to do a little editing on, and those will go up over the next week or two. But to have people contributing to the site is absolutely phenomenal. I love it when people send stuff in. And if you want to be one of those people that send stuff in, you can send any articles or audio files that you want to guest@thegeekgeneration.com. And I would love to include that in either the show here or the site. So as always, like I say, if you like this show, please tell your friends about it, because that's going to help us reach out and, get a bigger group going on here. And the bigger the group is, the more fun this will be. If you want to visit the site, please go to www.thegeekgeneration.com. You will find links to all of the articles that we talked about today, as well as tons of other stuff. While you're there, there is a button to subscribe to this show in iTunes. While you're there, please rate the show and write a review, which helps increase our visibility in the iTunes store. There's also a donate button where you can send me money. As I've said, nobody's going to, and I don't expect anybody to, but it is there if you want to use it. If you have any questions, comments, insults, or topics you'd like us to discuss on a future episode, send those to podcast@thegeekgeneration.com or @geekgeneration on Twitter. Yes, I didn't give a poll question out this week because, really, I just didn't feel it. So hopefully we'll have one of those coming back next week for you. I already said how to submit an article or an audio file. Again, that's guest@thegeekgeneration.com. And as always, the show theme is provided by Machine Supremacy. A link to their site can be found on our site. So wrapping up lucky number 13, Anna, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Always a good time to get a female voice on the show and hear the geek girl's opinion.
It's about time.
It's about time. You're just waiting in the wings.
I want to be heard.
Well, hopefully you'll be joining us again in the future. So,
sure.
All that stuff being said, we will see you next time on The Geek Generation.